More of Lake Effect on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyne.
And I'm Bonnie North. Korea is on the minds of many around the world this month, but for the first time in a while, it's not the threat of war between the North and the South that dominates our minds. In fact, North Korea and South Korea's relationship is experiencing a rare thaw as the Winter Olympics play out in Pyeongchang, South Korea.
The opening ceremonies last week featured teams from both countries marching into the stadium under a unified Korean flag, and the women's hockey team playing in the Winter Games features players from both the North and the South. Our foreign policy contributor, Art Sear, has spent plenty of time in South Korea, and he's with us in the studio now. Welcome back to the show.
Nice to see you, sir. Thank you, as always, for having me on your program.
What is it about the Olympics and apparently women's hockey and some other sports that kind of enables this thaw in this longstanding frozen relationship?
Sports, along with culture, are neutral and a way to try to develop new friends and new associations. In the 1930s, Nazi Germany was extremely aggressive in trying to have the Olympics in Germany and in Berlin, and they succeeded. It did not make a lot of new friends for the regime, but they did well enough that I think it's fair to say some credit accrued. This is several years before the beginning of World War II in Europe. On a more positive note, and certainly a more wholesome note, the U.S., from the beginning of the Cold War, has given some sustained emphasis not only to athletic but cultural educational exchanges. It's extremely, extremely important and also confirmed as, on balance, a positive way to get beyond national differences.
Sports also has this great propaganda value as well. I know
Hitler
knew that.
Exactly. Yeah, quite right. Took the words right out of my mouth. And yeah, he was looking for propaganda, and that's the word that I was searching for. It sums it up. And we are too. During the Cold War, there was intense competition. And not only during the Cold War, but since, the Soviet Union and now Russia have been not only accused, but in effect convicted of doping their athletes. We did extremely well in the Olympics when rules were much more strict concerning amateur status. And the U.S., nonetheless, playing by the rules, did extremely well.
But in getting back to Korea then,
right.
is it that the propaganda value of cooperation at this point is stronger than the propaganda value of victory, if you will? Or did the North Koreans just see, you know, more to gain from being part of the world community in this way?
Yeah, I think it's an encouraging sign. They're much more calculating than they seem. Since the beginning of the Cold War, that regime has been addicted to hysterical, over-the-top, crazy broadcasts, including by loudspeakers directed toward South Korean and American and other UN troops during the war, and also since the war. I've been at the DMZ several times since 1985. The still very tense border separating North and South Korea at the 38th parallel, and there are always loudspeakers going on, very monotonous and tiresome. But that's part of the tone and substance of the regime. The North is much more calculating than they seem, and their survival eventually, and they know this, depends on, if not jump-starting, doing something to get their moribund economy off life support from China and, to some extent, Russia, and it's very much in their interest. They must be feeling more secure now, and ultimately that's to the good. That's to our benefit.
The opening ceremonies last week marked the first time a member of the ruling North Korean family set foot, to our knowledge, in South Korea, I think, since the end of the Korean War. Would you imagine that there was other business that was done besides just that appearance in the stadium?
Yes, indeed. And in fact, they've been open about high-level conversations between a delegation from North Korea and South Korea. The leader in North Korea has invited the president of South Korea to have discussions. Let me take the opportunity to mention that I think this characteristic concern in Washington that there somehow might be a break or lack of solidarity between Washington and Seoul is quite misguided. It's their country, it's their peninsula, and the more the South Koreans, including their current very, very impressive president, can take the lead, I think the better.
I wondered if there was something to be said for the U.S. not being necessarily a lead player in this way.
Yes, indeed. There's a lot to be said. And way back in the days of Richard Nixon, which I remember clearly, but not all of our listeners do, including you, sir.
I remember. I have some memory of the Nixon administration.
Well, he and Henry Kissinger from the get-go, from the start of the administration, started issuing a modestly titled State of the World report, which, as usual with Nixon and Kissinger, was serious, specific, and actually made a lot of policy sense. And from around 1970, President Nixon and his advisors were underscoring the fact that the U.S. can't and shouldn't do everything. We should be relying more and more on our allies. And that was during the height of the Cold War.
So we've seen situations both in Korea and other parts of the world in which some other factor, something like sports, has moved the needle in terms of international relations. Is there a window of opportunity these things create that needs to be taken advantage of?
Not immediately, necessarily. One of the strengths that so many of our Asian friends have, and we impatient Americans often do not, is taking the long view. It's extremely important. In conflict situations, I wish we'd been more mindful of that during the Vietnam War, and actually thought that at the time in my youth, not just with 20/20 hindsight. And patience and planning for the long term is particularly important, I think, at any time in foreign policy, but particularly in dealing with Asian developments, because by nature, our Asian friends seem to take a very long-term perspective.
It is remarkable to think about the women's hockey team representing Korea at this Winter Olympics. It consists not only of South Korean and North Korean women, but a handful of American and other North American players of Korean descent. It's kind of amazing to think of all of these nationalities competing under one flag.
Yes, very good point. Very well put. I wish I'd said that. You're absolutely right. The Korean population has assimilated very, very effectively and successfully in the U.S. over a relatively short period of time, in contrast to some other populations, including from Asia, and our leaders in academia and lots of other areas. That's a basic asset of ours, and one reason, especially concerning women's collaboration, as usual, it facilitates that kind of cooperation across national borders. You're very, very right to bring up that point.
I do want to ask you about one other issue that's cropped up. In the midst of all this comes the news that President Trump is planning a major military parade along the lines of something we might see in North Korea or think back on from Soviet days. What do you make of that plan? Do these kinds of things, whether they're here in other countries, have any kind of sway in terms of how countries perceive each other?
We have actually a tradition in this country outside of parades concluding wars, particularly important in at the end of World War II in 1945 and the end of our Civil War in 1865. That's appropriate and a way of recognizing and reintegrating returning warriors and returning veterans.
But in terms of a parade demonstrating presumably military strength?
Yeah, that's not a tradition in this country, and I think it's most unfortunate, frankly. I have a link to, speaking of presidents and veterans, I have a link on my Carthage Clausen Center blog to Eisenhower's farewell address. I show it in class and to others as much as possible. It's extremely instructive. President Eisenhower, a credible and very successful military leader, He gave a series of observations and warnings about the importance and also danger of our military establishment. Among other things, he said, we don't have a military tradition in this country. A very large standing military is new. Since the beginning of the Cold War, we demobilized dramatically after World War II. But even before Korea, we're starting to remobilize. It's new. It's unavoidable. It's a serious threat to us. And he speaks quite eloquently about the cost is significant in terms of the military. I certainly mean no disrespect, quite the contrary, but military spending is sunk capital. It's not the same as productive capital. It's not the same as serving the population in humane ways. Glad you brought it up.
Well, and I will say, Art Sear, there is always great propaganda value in having you in the studio with us.
Well, yes, it's not fake propaganda either. It's always always very positive and productive when I have a chance to talk with you.
Art Sear is a professor of political economy and world business, and he directs the Clausen Center for World Business at Carthage College in Kenosha. He is a regular Lake Effect contributor.